10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Tuesday morning. Marquise Munson alongside as well. And fellas, we spent all of last hour talking about the Nashville's best sports bracket that we came out with at ESPN 102.5 The Game yesterday. Voting begins with the Jeff Fisher region today at 9 o'clock. I'll leave this up to y'all. Do we want to reveal who we have winning the bracket, or should we save that for another time? Munson, what do you think?
I think predictions usually come out like after the bracket's released on these analysts going off on who they think is going to win the tournament. So, you know, why not? I think we can have a prediction of who we think is going to win the bracket.
All right, Rexrode, I'm right to say that you had all one seeds in your final four, right?
Lame as that is, yes, you're right.
I did too, so I don't feel bad. Now, I will say, the David Price, Shea Weber thing to me was still very close. I'll start with you, Joe. When you look at the Final Four matchups, I would have it Steve McNair versus David Price, and then Eddie George versus Pecorine. We'll start with the McNair versus Price. What are your thoughts on that matchup?
It's really interesting. So, again, I want to make sure we're clear. We are not predicting what will happen. We are saying what we think should happen, right?
Yes. I mean, you could do a combination of both if you want to. But, yes, I am operating off what I think should happen.
Yeah. Well, I am on that side of the bracket. I mean, the thing is, like, David Price's major league career has had more achievement than Steve McNair's. And I know McNair got to the Super Bowl. And I know he was co-MVP. But David Price's, Major League Baseball career has had more achievement. The thing is, though, it wasn't here,
Right.
Now, he had amazing achievement here at the two previous levels, but I'm going to go Steve McNair.
I also am going to go Steve McNair. I agree. And really, to be honest with you, as I was breaking it down, that's ultimately what made the decision for me, is that everything Price has done in the major leagues, obviously, has not taken place here since we do not have a major league team. But that, I think, is going to be an interesting part of this, Joe, like the eye of the beholder. Like, how much do you weigh the fact that his professional success wasn't here, or do you just conclude the professional success, no matter where it is, into the overall discussion? I think it's going to be interesting to see how people vote in that way, because, I think people look at it on paper. If you've been around Nashville for a while and you look at a Steve McNair and David Price matchup and you just think McNair's the automatic winner, I think it's going to be closer than people think.
I think you're right. I do. I think it will be close, but I think ultimately it should be and will be McNair in the final.
Munson, what are your thoughts on the Price versus McNair matchup?
I'm going to go McNair. I'm sorry. I just got to go McNair. McNair is my all-time favorite player, period. He was like one of the first. He's the quarterback that got me watching the NFL. I didn't watch the NFL like that. I didn't. Him and Michael Vick are like the two players that I like watch. Michael Vick being in college at the time at Virginia Tech, and McNair, obviously in the league. So I'm going to always, if you're going to give me a choice between Steve McNair and a lot of things, I'm probably going to go Steve McNair. But I think the finals is probably going to end up being Eddie George versus Steve McNair.
Interesting you bring that up, because there's Eddie George on the other side of the bracket and also Pecorine as well, depending on if you've got Rene beating Derrick Henry in the Elite Eight. I do. So then that sets up an Eddie George-Rene matchup. But it would be interesting, Munson, for an Eddie George-Derrick Henry matchup.
That's actually what I have. I think it's going to be because I think recency bias is going to play a big part in that voting process. And, Pecorine has done a lot, he's going to go down as, one of the best Preds players in history. But recency bias between the two players, if you want to compare and contrast, Derrick Henry's got that by a landslide, especially of what we've seen of Pecorino of recent memory. So I think Derrick Henry's going to win only because of that.
Okay.
And so look, that's why I give him the edge.
I think you may be right, but he shouldn't be right.
Yeah, I shouldn't be. No, I shouldn't be. Now, if I was going off of who I think, I'm going to go Pecorino. That's no problem. Even with my Alabama bias, I'm still going to go Pecorino. But I just think with the recent memory of both players, I just think that Derrick Henry's going to have the edge on that.
Joe, let's just say for the sake of this discussion that the matchup in this part of the bracket is Eddie George versus Pecorino. That's very interesting to me. Obviously, it's two different sports, but I think the popularity among their specific fan bases, if you're a Titans fan, I mean, I'm not sure there's ever been a more popular player than Eddie George was with this franchise. Certainly the same thing with Pecorino with the Preds as well. That, to me, is a really interesting matchup. I've got Eddie George beating Pecorino, but I think it's going to be really close.
Yeah, I go the other way. I've got Pecorino beating Eddie George. I think, first of all, again, in what should happen, what I'm voting on Pecorino. I mean, you're talking about a Vezina winner, talking about the best player in franchise history. I agree that it's an interesting personality matchup because they're both so popular. But we talk about the recency thing, and I know Pekka has had a tough year this year, and we're seeing – you know, probably the early, well, I don't even if early stages, you know, we're seeing him at near the end of his career right now. He's still a very popular, beloved player in this town, you know, and anytime he has a good night, I mean, you can feel in that building, you know, there's just like people rooting so much for him. I still think you're talking about him now versus, you know, Eddie who played many years ago. So I think he will win too. Maybe I'm wrong on that. I definitely think he should. I mean, I've got McNair and Pecorino matching up in the final.
So can we do just like a quick PSA then?
Okay.
Of just saying that do not take into account what you last saw. And I know people aren't going to listen to that anyway.
Yeah.
But take into the account the entire career, the entire resume of the players that you're voting for. Don't just take, okay, I just saw Mookie Betts signed to the Dodgers, and that's pretty cool because the Dodgers are a big team, so I'm going to go vote for Mookie Betts. No. Or last time I saw David Price, he was kind of struggling a little bit, you know? So I'm not going to vote for David Price. But take into account the entire resume of these players. Because if that's the case, then we'll have fair and balance on each of these voting. Because when you look at Pecorino's resume compared to Derrick Henry, there should be, without a doubt, Pecorino can get past that. But I just think like people have in their mentality that the last thing I saw is the best thing I saw. So let's take that mentality out of it, and let's focus on the all-around resume of these players.
Well, Derrick Henry will be the ultimate test of that. And I think what you'll see is you'll see Derrick Henry. Like, I don't think he should be a two. I don't think he should be, you know, in the – I don't think he should be in the Sweet 16. But I think he will be in the Elite Eight, and I think he's got a chance to be past that just because right now he's the thing. And, again, he just was unbelievable in two playoff wins.
So, Munson, you've got Eddie George versus Derrick Henry. Who wins that one?
I'm still going to Eddie George. Eddie George. Yeah. I have a Steve McNair, Eddie George final. Like that.
I do too.
That's what I have. And I think that's like it, the intriguing part about it, like when you go into an NCAA tournament, like maybe not this year because it was a little bit wide open, but in previous years, a lot of times where you think you have like a wide open bracket and there's so much competition around you, but then those two teams that you expected to be there are going to be there. That's kind of how I look at this bracket. Like there's going to be a lot of fun and challenging matchups, but when it's all said and done in the finals, I just think, in my mind, my opinion, I think the two no-brainers for me are Eddie George and Steve McNair.
All right, so I'm going to put all of us on the spot right now, and Munson, we'll start with you. You've got McNair versus Eddie George in the final. Who wins and why?
I'm going to go Steve McNair, and I think he's the best Titan there has ever been. So, and I think that's the easy no-brainer. He's put this team on the map, so to say. So I'm going to go Steve McNair. That's but then, like I said, that's going to be no disrespect to Eddie George, because I think what Steve McNair did on putting the Titans on the map, I think, you know, Eddie George also has a say-so for that same argument as well. So, you know, but I'm just going to go Steve McNair, one of my favorite players. So,
all right, so Joe, you have McNair versus Pecorine in the final. Who wins and why?
Yeah, I think you're talking about the most popular player in the histories of both franchises. Again, you know, we're talking Titans era, of course. You know, if we're talking the whole franchise, that'd be another interesting discussion, you know, when you talk about like an Earl Campbell. But when you talk about the Titans, it's Steve McNair. Talk about the Preds, it's Pecorine. And I'm going to give, even though, again, this, you got the guy who's playing now, and that can be an edge, I think you're going to go with Steve McNair. You know, this is one of those where I think it will go Steve McNair. So let's separate those two. What should it be? Again, I think you can really make a case. I mean, both of them got their teams to the doorstep of a championship. Now, I also think, but see, so you tell me, Robbie, co-MVP of the NFL,
yeah,
Vezina winner. I mean, I think co-MVP is harder to get, even though Vezina is, you know, it's the best you can possibly be at your position. I think that co-MVP is big. That really says something. I'm going to give a slight, and what should be to me, I'm going to give him just by a whisker, Steve McNair, and I think that's what will happen too.
I agree. I've got McNair winning as well against Eddie George, but I'll be honest with you. We talked about some tough votes that we've had in this bracket. The McNair versus Eddie George to me is the toughest one, because I was growing up when McNair and George were playing for the Titans. I was, you know, 7, 8 years old, right when the Titans came into town and were in their heyday here. And look, I'll be honest with you, during those runs that they made to the Super Bowl and really all the way up until 2002, 2003, when you were talking about the rivalry between the Titans and the Ravens and Eddie George versus Ray Lewis, Eddie George was the face of the franchise. It was not Steve McNair. Eddie George was the face of the franchise. That's what made the vote very difficult for me. But I go back to the overall picture, the importance of the position at the quarterback position, the co-MVP, the drive in the Super Bowl, the way he performed in the Super Bowl. I mean, that iconic drive that he led down the stretch there, that they end up one yard short. I mean, that play he made to get away from Kevin Carter on that drive was still one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. So I very slightly give the edge to Steve McNair, but that was the toughest vote I had in the whole bracket.
A lot of shit, you know, a lot of disrespect for Pecorine. That's all I have to say. I mean, if I disrespected Shea Weber, you have disrespected Pecorine.
Wow, that's come back full circle on me there. I like it. Good job, Joe. That was nice.
Yes, thank you.
When we come back, how would we rank the top 10 quarterbacks going into the 2020 season, and where does Ryan Tannehill fall on that list? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic, taking you through this rainy Tuesday here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, it's interesting to kind of look at the discussion of NFL quarterbacks and try to determine where Ryan Tannehill falls into that discussion. We all know what he did with the Titans last year in that 13-game stretch. If I were to ask you how you ranked the top 10 quarterbacks going into this season and where Tannehill falls on that list, maybe he doesn't even fall in the top 10, I think it's interesting to see what the responses of people would be. And I'm going to throw out 10 names to you that I have ranked, and you can react to these. And remember, this is the quarterback based on what they are like right now. So not their career, just based on where they are in their careers right now. And I've accounted, obviously, their own ability, but also I think the situations that they're in as well in terms of my top 10 list. I think everybody would agree at the moment Patrick Mahomes is the number one quarterback in the NFL. Just won the Super Bowl. His arm talent is probably right up there with as good of quarterbacks as we've ever seen. At number two, I have Russell Wilson. I have Lamar Jackson at 3. Deshaun Watson at 4, Drew Brees at 5, Aaron Rodgers at 6, Jimmy G at 7, Tom Brady at 8. Ryan Tannehill I have coming in at number 9 in the NFL. And then I have Dak Prescott at number 10. When you hear that list that I've just thrown out there, what's your reaction?
I think that is a reasonable list. You know, I think a guy like Matt Ryan still registers for me. You know, the funny thing is, like, I could still make a case for you right now that, you know, Cam Newton, and you got to put the big asterisk, but if healthy, I could make a case for Cam Newton to be a top 10 QB in the league, which is crazy, you know, to say, given that he's unemployed right now. I think as far as I would mix a few things around on there. I would have Matt Stafford in the top 10. Again, just in terms of pure, he quarterbacks a crappy team, so you forget about him. But, like, I would have him absolutely ahead of, for example, a Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, I mean, I think Jimmy Garoppolo quarterbacks an excellent team, and he's good. You know, he's fine. But, like, that's where it's also tough sometimes. And, like, Lamar Jackson is tough, too, because certainly, I mean, I've got him, I think, like, 7th. You've got him higher. It's hard because, I mean, he was the freaking MVP, you know? So I feel like I'm downgrading him a little bit. But I'm still putting guys like Rodgers and Drew Brees ahead of him. And I've got Tannehill right around where you do. You know, I actually have, and this is, of course, they're right next to each other. I have him 8, Brady 9.
Oh, okay? Wow. Look at there.
But again, I mean, look, I mean, we know that the professional franchise in our city basically chose Tannehill over Brady.
They did.
Without us knowing exactly what Brady's mindset was there, they went after Tannehill. They prioritized signing Tannehill. And again, right now, at 31 years old, with what he just did compared with 42-year-old Tom Brady, I am giving Tannehill. I mean, I think Tom Brady still in the top 10 is awfully impressive for Tom Brady at his age. But that's about where I have him. I have him right on the fringe there at this point. And maybe he'll prove me wrong and have a monster year with the Bucks. You know, it's going to be fascinating to see. But other than that, though, I think we agree on who's in that top 10. And I'm with you. I got Russell Wilson right after Mahomes also. I still go Aaron Rodgers 3rd and then Drew Brees and then Watson. But, you know, I mean, with Rodgers, I know some people say, well, wait a minute. Rodgers and Brees are old too. So why do you have them there and Brady where he is? But I think those guys right now are still more on top of their game than Brady is.
It is interesting. As, like, I was putting this list together, looking around the quarterback landscape of the NFL, once you get outside of, you know, maybe the top 13 or 14, it's really just a crapshoot after that. Like, I mean, the Titans used to be perennially in that discussion of trying to find a quarterback. Thank God for their sake they have Ryan Tannehill right now, because, like I said, outside of the top 12 or 13 in the league, it's really bad out there.
It's tough. Now, of course, you could look at a guy like Phillip Rivers and still put him in there. You could look at a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, you know, if you think he's going to come back with that massive Rip Van Winkle beard and be good this year. You know, there's some people who – a lot less people, but some people who love Baker Mayfield and think a lot of him. You know, Daniel Jones could end up being good. Now, wait, you had Dak in your top 10, right?
I've got him number 10.
Yeah, I've got him just out. Like the guy like Carson Wentz. I mean, he's a pretty good player.
He is.
A guy like Jared Goff. He's, you know, a decent player. We thought a lot more of him a year ago, right? I still think Matt Ryan, though, is like I have Matt Ryan ahead of Dak. I have Matt Ryan ahead of Jimmy G, too. I think Matt Ryan is still a really good player who, again, sometimes you forget about the good quarterbacks for crappy teams like Matt Stafford and Matt Ryan. But, yeah, so much of this league, because I'm sorry, I don't buy, you know, Josh Allen at all. I'm out on him. There's some guys who could be good, like a Teddy Bridgewater. I do think we're kind of just ignoring Kirk Cousins. I wouldn't have him in the top 10, but I think he doesn't count as like the dregs that you're talking about.
No.
I mean, he's a good quarterback. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Kyler Murray in Arizona. I mean, I think he's an exciting young player and certainly could be a player to watch here moving forward. And then there's a whole bunch of teams that just don't have anybody or have guys who are unproven, a bunch of teams who are – or a few teams certainly that are about to draft QBs.
Where do we think – and look, this is really hard obviously, because we haven't seen him play an NFL snap yet – and we don't know what his team is going to look like other than what they look like right now, which is really bad. Joe Burrow, I mean, there's so much hype about him coming into the league. Where do we think he could fit in? Like, do we think there's any chance he could come in and be a top 10 quarterback in the league immediately?
No, because he's going to, you know, for one thing, like, if you're playing for a really bad team, it's going to be stacked against you anyway. And I just think, I mean, how many times have we seen a rookie come in and do that? I mean, we just talked about Patrick Mahomes, right? He got the luxury of sitting out and backing up Alex Smith and watching that, which is how it should go.
Yeah.
With a rookie quarterback.
I mean, RG3 took the league by storm, man.
There's a great example. RG3 came in and was great. And the way they used him, some NFL defenses weren't ready for that. And then, of course, he got hurt, and, I mean, wow, did he fade. But I'm trying to think. He's a great example in recent years of someone who came right in as a rookie and would have been. And Dak, certainly, you know, Romo's hurt. Dak comes in. Dak is great. But I still think that team was so much, you know, built around defense and Zeke
right.
that he, you know, they were able to – protect him and support him more than most quarterbacks. Joe Burrow and Cincy, he's not getting that kind of support and protection. Russell Wilson was really good as a rookie. Was he top 10 in the league?
Vince Young.
Yeah, there you go, rookie of the year. I mean, yeah. Was Kyler Murray was rookie of the year, right? But he wasn't. He wasn't a top 10 quarterback, right? Was Vince Young a top 10 quarterback as rookie of the year? I don't think so.
I don't know. The way he was playing at the end of that rookie year, you could make an argument.
Yeah.
He was pretty good.
It doesn't happen. I mean, you know, it doesn't happen a lot. Deshaun Watson was electric as a rookie. I would probably, if you went through that year and went through all the QBs, he probably wasn't a top 10 QB, but he was one of those things where you're like, you know, watch out for him. He's going to be great for many, many years. So that's tough. I mean, I think Joe Burrow, we might see that this year and say, yeah, I mean, you can see. I mean – based on what we saw last year, it's again like at some point if you watch someone week after week and he keeps doing the same things like Tannehill here, you're like, okay, I'm sold. So I think he's going to end up being a really good NFL quarterback. But usually when you're that good, you go that high, you're going to a terrible team.
There's no question he's going to a terrible team. There's no doubt about that in Cincinnati. When we come back, what are some of the greatest upsets in NCAA tournament history? What are the most memorable ones that we can remember here on Morning Drive? We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Are you working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic? Stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream us from the website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back into Morning Drive. This is Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, you were talking earlier when we were going through the bracket that we've put together here at ESPN 102.5 The Game about the Nashville's best sports, that basketball was not getting enough love. So this segment for you, my friend, this is what we've come up to make you feel a little bit better about yourself. We're going to talk about the greatest upsets in NCAA tournament history. When you talk about upsets in terms of how memorable they are to you, what's the number one game that sticks out in your opinion?
I think it's got to be, and it's, you know, some of this is like personal experience. First time I was allowed to stay up to watch a national championship game was NC State beating Houston. I was heartbroken, too, because I loved Houston. For anybody who doesn't know about Phi Slamma Jamma, you're talking about Akeem Olajuwon, Clyde Drexler, Michael Young, the most unbelievable dunking team ever, and a team that should have beaten NC State by about 50, and they lost 54-52. Now, this is – and you can probably – this has been replayed recently. You can find it. I think it's one of the most famous sports clips ever is Derek Wittenberg putting up that late bomb and Lorenzo Charles dunking at home at the buzzer. Jimmy Valvano, the NC State coach, running around the court trying to find somebody to hug. You know, that's one of the great endings in sports history. I think also it has a great case to be the greatest upset in NCAA tournament history. We think about first round stuff, and we just had a 16 over a 1 a couple years ago, but I think that's it. If that's I have two others in mind. One would be another championship game, which was just on the other day, and that's Villanova over Georgetown. That was an 8, but Georgetown destroyed Villanova when they played during the season. You're talking about Georgetown with Patrick Ewing, you know, and just great players. I mean, John Thompson's dynasty, a team that a year earlier beat Phi Slamma Jamma in the national championship game, another heartbreaking loss for Houston fans. But Villanova should not have been within 25 points, and they shot, I think, 78% in that game. It was just crazy, you know, they pulled that off. And then the other one that people might not think of immediately, but I think it really is up there, UConn in 2006. You talked – we were talking yesterday about 04 UConn, right, with Okafor – and Ben Gordon taking on that Vanderbilt team, and it was kind of like, D-Mac was talking about, he's kind of like before the game, this is not going to go well for you. Well, the 2005-06 UConn Huskies should have won it all that year as well. Absolutely loaded, and then That was Jim Calhoun. That's a team that went, you know, at this point in this game, they are 30-3. Andrew Bynum at center, Jeff Adrian, Craig Austry, Robert Garrison. I mean, they were loaded. Rudy Gay. I mean, you know, they had Hilton Armstrong. They were absolutely loaded. They were, to me, the best team. They lost to George Mason in the Elite Eight. That was a crazy George Mason run. And I thought, like, great run, good job. You got to the Elite Eight. Now you lose by 30 to UConn. And they somehow won that game. So those three stand out to me.
The one I remember the most, and this is, I don't know if this is, you know, when you're ranking the best upsets of all time, I don't know where this falls. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago, Joe, you were there for this. The MTSU win against Michigan State, that is, to me, is the most memorable one. Now, again, that's because I went to MTSU and I was invested watching that game. But just the control that they seem to have of that game, really the whole time, but especially into the second half there. That, to me, that's right up there in terms of when I think about the NCAA tournament and the upsets that I've witnessed either in person or watching on TV, that there, I think, is at the top of my list.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because at the time when it happened, I remember writing stuff about, is it possible that this is the greatest upset ever? And at that point, there had not been a 16-1. You know, UMBC –
right.
A couple years later would beat Virginia, and that's right on the right near the top of the list, and it's the only 16. But the couple things with that, though. I remember during the week hearing from Michigan State coaches like, this is not a 15. And the thing about MTSU that year is Giddy Potts, who's on our national sports bracket, I believe was suspended for a few games of that season, and MTSU lost all of them. I think it was 3 or 4 games in a row.
Yeah.
Someone out there can correct me if I'm wrong. But that stretch without Giddy Potts lowered that team's profile, and that team with Giddy Potts was not a 15 seed. That team was more like a 12 or 13 seed. So, like, again, that's one of those things where you're watching that game, and I'm like, Michigan State can't guard Reggie Upshaw. You know, I mean, they made runs in that game to get back into it, and MTSU just did whatever it wanted to on the offensive end of the floor. So I agree with you. Around here, obviously, that was massive. It's a massive win, and it's a huge upset, but that team was better than a 15. So that's why I don't quite include it, you know, on that top line.
And then in terms of just like the Cinderella stories that have taken place, there's a ton to choose from. I mean, you can talk about Butler getting to the national championship game 2 years in a row. That's right up there for me. George Mason and the run they were able to put together. What was that, 2006 when they did that?
Right.
Just a really cool story there. UMBC with their win against Virginia. I mean, there's a lot to choose from. Loyola, Chicago, Richmond in 1991. Like, there's a few you could choose from. The George Mason one, to me, I remember that just because, I mean, it came out of nowhere, and just the way they were able to win. And you mentioned the UConn team that you were talking about. George Mason beat that team. I mean, that to me was probably the most memorable Cinderella run of my lifetime so far.
Yeah, no question. My sister's a George Mason grad, so even she was paying attention. I'm like, yeah, your basketball team is making a run. And that, by the way, that run started with them beating Michigan State. So I covered their first game of that run in Dayton, and that was a 6-11 game. So it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like a huge seeding gap, but still, I mean, no one thought George Mason was going to win. I didn't think they were going to win that game. And then they go beat North Carolina and on. That was an amazing run. I'm glad you brought up 1991 because that's another one. And actually, at the time, that was the first 15, was those beloved Richmond Spiders. And I lived in Richmond, by the way.
Yeah.
I lived, you know, near there. Over Jim Boeheim's hated Syracuse Orangemen. So that was a shocker. I mean, that Syracuse team, for people who remember it, I mean, that team had Billy Owens, Adrian Autry. Sherman Douglas had moved on, but loaded team that a lot of people thought could go win the thing or at least get to the Final Four. So that was huge. Also, a couple years later, Santa Clara over Arizona. One of many disappointments for Arizona. I mean, you're talking about a two seed there. Chris Mills, Khalid Reeves, Damon Stoudemire, loaded team. Now, there was a kid who played for Santa Clara who people ended up hearing a little bit about. And, of course, his name was Steve Nash. But at the time, you're just like, wait, this is some Canadian dude, you know, just destroying Arizona? You know, so that one also stands out for me.
Yeah, and I think when you take a look at the Richmond game, obviously I was not alive for that one, but I've heard stories about that one. The George Mason, Loyola Chicago a couple years ago, much to the dismay of Tennessee fans, that was really fun to watch with Sister Jean and everything that came along with that one as well. I mean, that was so much fun to watch, and it makes me just kind of sad again that we talk about the NCAA tournament this year not taking place, because I think this year a run like that from a team you don't expect it may have been as likely as ever before with how wide open we thought the tournament was going to be.
Yeah. Of course, this would have been the year it was like all one seeds because we thought that. But
all chalk, yeah.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, this would have been wide open. And, yes, I know Vols fans may not have loved Sister Jean by the end of that, but that was crazy. And I thought they actually had a chance to beat Michigan in the – you know, they were right there to get to – because usually those teams, we've seen some of those runs to the Final Four, VCU, you know, with Shaka Smart too. And then, you know, usually those teams fall off and don't get to the actual title game. You know, it's very rare that you see one of those teams actually win in the Final Four and get to the title game. Butler was a team that did 2 years in a row. And, again, you kind of thought differently of Butler after that. But usually that doesn't happen. So, you know, you're trying to think. I mean, NC State was that team getting to the championship game, even though it was a Power 5 team, was a massive upset on its own. They barely got in the tournament.
So, Joe, I'm going to put you on the spot very quickly because I think it's easy for maybe if you're just a casual sports fan, you're listening and you're trying to determine the greatest upset of all time. You look at UMBC's win over Virginia. It's the only 16-1 upset to ever happen, so a lot of people just gradually and automatically go there. In your opinion, is it as simple as that? What's the greatest NCAA tournament upset in history if you had to choose one?
No, I mean, to me, it really is. Again, I think George Mason's underrated in 06 over UConn because that's just at that stage of the tournament against a team that loaded. But I think it has to come down to those two championship games in the 80s. I think it has to come down to either NC State over Houston or Villanova over Georgetown. Like the NC State Houston game again, like that's just like a mythological game to me. I will never forget watching it, and you've watched the end of it a million billion times. But actually, I think if I have to make a pick, I think I go – because the thing about NC State is they had Thurl Bailey, they had Derek Wittenberg, they had Sidney Lowe, they had good players. And so they kind of like underachieved, and it's sort of like we're talking about with MTSU. They were better than their profile going in the tournament. But I think I got to go with Villanova. Villanova, I mean, they had like Ed Pinckney. You know, they had like Harold Jensen is out here hitting every shot. Like Georgetown was absolutely loaded. David Wingate, all these guys, you know, obviously Patrick Ewing as a senior. There is no way that they should have been anywhere close to them. They shoot 78.6% in that game. I think I've got to go with Nova, Raleigh Massimino, 1985.
When we come back, the NCAA made a decision yesterday to grant extra eligibility for spring sport athletes. What do we make of that decision by the NCAA and how it could impact the future? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And Joe, we talked about earlier in the show the NCAA's decision to grant an extra year of eligibility for spring sports athletes, and that comes, I think, to no surprise yesterday that the NCAA Division I Council voted to put that into motion. Now, I think kind of the blowback from that has been they did not vote to grant winter sport athletes like basketball players and hockey players the same thing in terms of their extra year of eligibility. Now there's a much different situation going on there between, you know, spring sports basically had just gotten started and were still had a long way left to go in their season, whereas basketball and hockey were in conference tournaments. Some teams had already finished their season, so it's a much different situation. I'm not sure how realistic winter sports getting the same treatment as the spring sports was going to be as we headed into this conversation anyway, but what's kind of your reaction to the news coming out that spring sports and spring athletes have been granted the opportunity to have an extra year of eligibility, and of course the school going to have a say on exactly how this goes about for these athletes on a school-by-school basis?
Yeah, and first of all, in the winter thing, I mean, it is tough. You think about we had Tyler Scanlon on a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was last week. I don't know. The weeks are running together for me, but Belmont senior who, you know, won the OVC championship game over Murray State with the backdoor layup and finally got his chance as a senior to experience the NCAA tournament. You know, there's some East Tennessee State seniors who had a chance really as like a 10 seed, like they could have made noise. Yeah. You know, guys like that, you feel for, you know, men's and women's basketball players who, especially like the ones who maybe had their first chance to be in an NCAA tournament and it's taken away, and you're like, man, it'd be cool if, you know, if they could get another year and come back and do it. But, I mean, I don't think that many would have anyway, and it was way too complicated and convoluted to get into the winter sport. That was kind of clear early in this. I think this came down about how I expected, which is like it's a blanket waiver. It's an extra year of eligibility for everyone. So it's not just like seniors. It's everyone gets a year of eligibility. And then it's going to come down to these schools. I mean, it's and so many things in college athletics, the haves and the have-nots, on things like this, it's very easy to tell them apart. I think that there are, you know, the schools that have a lot of football money, that have some reserves, you're probably going to be able to do more with this. But I think you're going to see a lot of situations where, you know, a senior can come back, but there's just not aid for that senior. I mean, it's going to come down to the quality of the player too and all that. It's, in some cases, it's like, yeah, we'll take that player back. Absolutely. You can offer the same or less financial aid next year compared with what he or she has right now. You're going to see a lot of less. And again, the whole thing here is so much centered around what happens in the fall with football. Is football happening? Is that revenue coming in? The NCAA tournament revenue is lost, and it's already having an impact, a negative impact on these athletic departments. Football, I mean, if football is essentially untouched and all that revenue comes in, I think you'll see more cases of, you know, people, you know, getting the same aid and coming back, things like that. I think if not, I mean, there's so many impacts of that, and this may not mean that much because I think a lot of kids are not going to have that opportunity.
And we'll have Belmont Athletic Director Scott Corleone with us in the next segment to begin the 9 o'clock hour to discuss some of this as well. And, Joe, it's interesting, like, from a player standpoint, and you mentioned the scholarships. I mean, maybe some people get the same scholarship. A lot of times I agree with you it's going to be less. Maybe in some cases it's not anything at all, especially in the cases of seniors weighing the option whether to come back and play another year next year or to just move on with either their careers or their lives in the workforce. I am interested to see like how many seniors make a decision to come back that maybe didn't get an opportunity to close out their career this year for spring sports. Maybe you come back and, you know, going into it next year, maybe none of it's going to be paid for. You're going to have to kind of pay your own way. I'm interested to see kind of like what the discrepancy is between players that decide to come back and maybe pay their own way at that point versus those who just simply decide to move on.
Yeah, and you think, I mean, I think mostly in terms of baseball and softball, even though there's many other sports where you're going to see people have decisions to make. I mean, you think about the, you know, the SEC baseball teams in this state. You know, Vanderbilt has some guys who are going to be moving on to, you know, to Major League Baseball. Vanderbilt has a whole bunch of guys who move on to Major League Baseball or at least professional baseball, an opportunity, you know, to try to move up. So I have not studied like the Tennessee and Vanderbilt rosters, but I'm sure there are a few people who maybe have the possibility, you know, of coming back. And then it's a question of what's the aid look like. You know, you talk about a programs like that, and Tennessee's really, really getting going here and really rising as a program. You know, you're bringing in new players now. You know, so how do you split things up in that way? Now, again, you know, you can expand the rosters, and there's also, you know, there's money, not sure how much, but there's this NCAA student assistant fund that schools can use to pay, you know, for scholarships that are using the extra year next year. But how much can they get? How much is in the fund? You know, I don't know that answer right now. That's and again, so you've got the cut to revenue from the NCAA tournament, and we're going to see what happens with football. But I would think that fund would be pretty tied to how much football revenue is available, like a year, you know, not a year from now, but like as the spring sports season start next year.
And you brought up a good point earlier, Joe, in terms of like, you know, obviously we don't really know what's going to happen with football at this moment. We've talked earlier this week and into last week as well about the potential of playing college football games in front of no fans and how, you know, we look at it and that doesn't seem like that would be something that college football executives and people running athletic departments would want to do. But just from a TV side of this and the money that could be generated from that aspect, I think at this point, if that's the decision you're forced to make, if you're college football and you have to play in front of no fans, you just go ahead and do it just for the TV part of the money. Because like you said, football and the money they're able to generate, I mean, that's going to be a huge part of this discussion as well.
Right, like, you know, Kirk Herbstreit had the comment last week that raised a lot of eyebrows. You know, I'll be shocked if football season happens, which, like, I mean, I have a hard time agreeing with that just because we don't know. It's so hard to know how things will look even a month from now. And I also think even if they don't look, and you know, hopefully they look a lot better. Hopefully the curve is being flattened, and once we get into May, it's like there's a little bit of a path to, okay, this can come back, and with, you know, if it keeps going 2 months from now, you know, more can come back, and you can get to that point. But even aside from all that, I think every possible avenue will be exhausted when it comes to having football inventory on television. And maybe it is no fans, but you are talking about, and there's a lot of money that you're losing if you don't have fans. I mean, there's no, don't be confused. The home football gates, the home football weekends for Power Five programs, that's a huge part of their annual budget. But still, take away the TV revenue, now you're talking disastrous. And so I think every single possible avenue is going to be explored to make that possible, and there's plenty of time to try to figure it out. So, I like at this point, I will be shocked if there's not football. That's just my guess right now, but again, on either side of that, like we all, this is uncharted territory. We just don't know.
From a selfish point of view, Joe, like we talk all the time about, you know, the Vanderbilt football program being in bad shape, the, you know, the basketball program only winning 3 games in the last 2 years in conference play. Vanderbilt baseball, I mean, it's the shining program of that university. And to watch the talent that they put out there on a year-by-year basis, winning the national championship last year, I think they had a really good shot to win it again this year. From a selfish point of view, I'm sad that we don't get to see that, because I think watching some of those guys pitch, especially Kumar Rocker, I mean, any time I could watch him pitch was a treat, because he was something special.
Yeah, it stinks. I mean, it was a must-see sports every time Kumar Rocker is on the mound for this team this year, and now that's gone. The good news is Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, the hotshot freshman who is really, really talented, both those guys should be pitching for this team next year, and then I think both of them will be very high picks in the 2021 draft. So you know you have them, but like an Austin Martin, who's a junior who's going to, you know, he's going to go to pro baseball. I think he could be a really good major league player. It's too bad we don't get to see him. I look at that roster. The only two seniors are Harrison Ray and Ty Duvall, really good players. And I don't like, I think both of those guys are going to be in pro organizations next year. You know, I don't think that they would be coming back. So for this particular program, I wouldn't think this would impact it, at least in terms of seniors trying to find another year.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. Even, you know, Belmont, you look at their baseball program, they were 14-3 before the season just kind of got put on hold there and canceled. So, I mean, this is a lot of sports locally being impacted by this news as well. And we'll help Scott Corley will join us, Belmont AD. He'll help us talk about that in the next segment as we begin the 9 o'clock hour. That's coming up next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.